Greetings, friends. This time of Advent is a time of preparing our hearts for the Christmas season, where we remember the birth of Jesus. And in one of his sermons about Christmas, the great mystic Meister Eckhart said, "Here in time we make holiday because the eternal birth, which God the Father bore and bears unceasingly in eternity, is now born in time, in human nature." He went on to say, "St. Augustine says this birth is always happening, but if it does not happen in me, what does it profit me? What matters is that it shall happen in me." And the Christian mystic Angelus Silesius wrote that if Christ were born 1,000 times in Bethlehem and not in you, you remain lost. And so today I want to look at what it means to gestate and give birth to the life of Christ from within us. But I want to look at this using the analogy of seeds being planted in us, as told by Jesus in the parable of the sower. So this is from Matthew 13, verse 3 to 9. "Then he told them many things in parables, saying, 'A farmer went out to sow his seed. As he was scattering the seed, some fell along the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Some fell on rocky places, where it did not have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but then the sun came up. The seeds were scorched, and they withered because they had no root. Other seed fell among thorns, which grew up and choked the plants. Still other seed fell on good soil, where it produced a crop, 160 or 30 times what was sown. Whoever has ears, let them hear." I want to look at this parable from the point of view of our inner being as the ground on which the seed of Christ or the seeds of awakening fall. What this means is that we need to hear this parable not from the point of view of those who are bad or unsaved and thus unable to produce a harvest versus those who are good or saved and thus fruitful, which for some of us was the way we heard this parable from our traditions. But rather, I invite you to hear this from the vantage point that all of these kinds of ground are descriptive of our inner response at various times. An important point I want to make at the beginning is that the emergence of life from this inner seed that is planted in us is never something we achieve, for then the ego could claim success. And life is always given from the Creator, the source of life, from beyond the small achieving self. It's a kind of breaking in that is initiated and fulfilled by God. Gardeners know that there's nothing you can do to make a seed germinate and grow. This life is pressing in on us from outside of our small achieving selves. The Spirit is praying in us at a deeper level than our problem-solving selves can even hear. But we can participate in this process by keeping the environment conducive to the growth of a seed. This birthing is something that we can participate in through cultivation, openness, and surrender. If we do not prepare the seedbed of our lives, the seeds won't take root, as this parable so clearly illustrates. So we have to learn to remain open and soft in every moment, thereby creating the inner conditions conducive to the flourishing of Christ in us, the birth in the soul of Emmanuel, God with us. So I want to develop this idea of creating a conducive inner environment a bit further. And to do this, I'm going to turn to one of the great masters of contemplation, Thomas Merton. And his book titled New Seeds of Contemplation is a profound book on contemplative Christianity. And in it, he gives a very helpful discussion on this parable of the sower, in particular on the seeds that fell on the pathway. And so I'm going to read quite a bit from this book of his. It's in chapter 3 of the book. And I've taken the liberty of changing the gender pronouns just to keep it more inclusive so that we can all hear what he's saying. So let me begin with reading this part of that chapter. Every moment and every event of every person's life on earth plants seeds in his or her soul. For just as the wind carries thousands of winged seeds, so each moment brings with it seeds of spiritual vitality that come to rest imperceptibly in the minds and wills of people. Most of these unnumbered seeds perish and are lost because people are not prepared to receive them. For such seeds as these cannot spring up anywhere except in the good soil of freedom, spontaneity, and love. He goes on to say, every expression of the will of God is in some sense a word of God and therefore a seed of new life. The ever-changing reality in the midst of which we live should awaken us to the possibility of an uninterrupted dialogue with God. That's an incredible line. The ever-changing reality in the midst of which we live should awaken us to the possibility of an uninterrupted dialogue with God. I find that this is such an important thing to hear over and over again. This ever-changing reality in the midst of which we live. This is what scatters thousands of winged seeds, the potential for new life to emerge from within us. And so each moment brings with it seeds of spiritual vitality that come to rest imperceptibly in our minds and should awaken us to the possibility of an uninterrupted dialogue with God. We too easily want to divide up what we think belongs in this moment from what doesn't belong, what is sacred from what is secular, what we agree with from what we don't. And we tend to think of the seed that Jesus talks about in the parable of the sower as specifically spiritual teachings or sacred teachings or the preaching of the gospel. But as Merton says here, every moment and every event of every person's life on earth plants something in his or her soul. The seed of God that falls into our lives comes to us in every moment. This moment. Whether or not it takes root and grows in us to bear fruit depends on whether we receive it with a conducive attitude. And as Merton wrote in this paragraph, most of these unnumbered seeds perish and are lost because people are not prepared to receive them. For such seeds as these cannot spring up anywhere except in the good soil of freedom, spontaneity, and love. So to explore this attitude a bit further, I'll read further down in this chapter of Merton's, where he wrote, we must learn to realize that the love of God seeks us in every situation and seeks our good. God's inscrutable love seeks our awakening. True, since this awakening implies a kind of death to our exterior self, we will dread God's coming in proportion as we are identified with this exterior self and attached to it. But when we understand the dialectic of life and death, we will learn to take the risks implied by faith, to make the choices that deliver us from our routine self and open to us the door of a new being, a new reality. This is a crucial point that he's making here. We tend to resist what will challenge our ego identity and what falls outside of our certainty about how life should be. And so we react to life in a kind of knee-jerk way, out of our well-trodden, conditioned pathways of habit. These conditioned pathways of our routine self are so well trodden that they are hardened against receiving the seeds of life that come to us in every circumstance. And so, as Merton says here, we have to learn to make alternative choices in how we respond moment to moment, to shift into a kind of receptivity that will deliver us from our routine self and open to us the door of a new being, a new reality. Then he goes on to write in this chapter, "The mind that is the prisoner of conventional ideas and the will that is the captive of its own desire cannot accept the seeds of an unfamiliar truth and a supernatural desire. For how can I receive the seeds of freedom if I am in love with slavery? And how can I cherish the desire of God if I am filled with another and an opposite desire? God cannot plant God's liberty in me because I am a prisoner myself in the desire for the things that I hate, and I have hardened my heart against true love." He goes on to say, "I must learn, therefore, to let go of the familiar and the usual and consent to what is new and unknown to me. I must learn to leave myself in order to find myself by yielding to the love of God. If I were looking for God, every event and every moment would sow in my will grains of God's life that would spring up one day in a tremendous harvest." And then he goes on to write, "If these seeds would take root in my liberty, and if God's will would grow from my freedom, I would become the love that God is, and my harvest would be God's glory and my own joy." As ever, he uses words with such beauty, power, and insight. I'll paste these quotes on this webpage, and I encourage you to read these in a receptive and prayerful way for yourselves, because each of us will hear this in a unique way. But I want to emphasize a few things that stood out for me when I have been reading this recently. What struck me here was the way in which he contrasts freedom with conventional thinking and what he describes as the routine self. Our go-to way of processing life is through our conventional thinking. So we actually don't even realize that that's what we're doing, because we're doing it all the time. So this is quite difficult to recognize in ourselves, but it's so important to start to see this, that this is our go-to way of processing life. Our well-trodden paths of neural reaction, filtered by our skewed perceptions and spun into meaning by our theories or theologies about life and God. And this has its place in our early lives and faith formation. But if we are to become in any way bearers of the life and liberty of Christ in the world, we have to move beyond this routine self and its way of processing daily life. Because it does become a kind of slavery. We become unconscious servants to the dictates of our conditioning, our culture, and our conventional way of thinking that has developed well-trodden, hardened pathways, leaving us imprisoned in the unrecognized and therefore powerful captivity of our routine selves. As Merton says in this paragraph, "God cannot plant God's liberty in me because I am a prisoner and I do not even desire to be free. I love my captivity and I imprison myself in the desire for the things that I hate, and I have hardened my heart against true love." You know, we can't even imagine that we have hardened our hearts against true love, because we have no idea what true love and liberty really looks like. Our society convinces us that freedom means being able to choose between lots of brands of chips or chocolate. That's a very light way of putting it. But this is just another way in which we get stuck in society's conventions in imagining what freedom is. The key here is expressed in these lines. I must learn, therefore, to let go of the familiar and the usual and consent to what is new and unknown to me. I must learn to leave myself in order to find myself by yielding to the love of God. If I were looking for God, every event and every moment would sow in my will grains of God's life that would spring up one day in a tremendous harvest. In working with this over the past few weeks, I've started to notice how many of my responses to daily life and interactions with people are conditioned responses, where I just fall into the same old neural grooves, prejudices, assumptions, and ways of processing what's happening, and my heart gets hardened and dull towards people, towards the moment, therefore towards God and even towards myself. This routine self cannot recognize what James Finlay so beautifully describes as the virginal newness of the moment. And so we're unable to receive the seeds of life fluttering down on us in every moment. The more we think we know, the less likely we are to receive the gift of the unprecedented newness of each moment. And so the invitation to us is to unhook, let go of our knowing. Start to recognize the well-trodden paths of reactivity and inner commentary, and ever so gently soften and open. Not judging ourselves for those well-trodden pathways, but just recognizing and gently letting go and opening, yielding, as Thomas Merton puts it, softening, and bringing our consent to what is new and unknown to us, as Merton puts it. This is where practices like contemplative prayer and mindfulness are so important, because we're encouraged to lightly let go of our typical mind speak and open in a soft, kind, non-judgmental and unconditional receptivity to the moment, receiving whatever winged seeds God is giving us with a kind of beginner's mind, an unknowing, a childlike freshness and curiosity about this, the texture, the feel, the beauty, the freshness of this moment. As Merton said, each moment is a scattering of the seeds of awakening, of the life of Christ in us. And this is even applies to moments that trigger a strong response in us, like a resistance response. And I think those moments are actually especially moments of potential awakening, seeds that come to us. And a helpful question to ask is, how is this a seed for my awakening? How can I receive this in a soft, receptive way rather than falling into my routine habit of hardening against it, resisting and rejecting this moment? Those are important questions to keep holding with us. Another way of phrasing this, which I've found particularly helpful when I'm feeling impatient or flabbergasted by somebody's obtuseness, is to imagine that they are a wisdom teacher or a guru in disguise, bringing me a potential riddle of transformation. That's quite a helpful thing to bring to situations like that. So when somebody triggers some reaction in you, this could be a powerful gift, a seed of transformation, because in that moment, you are being showed the hard edge of your small self, your prejudices that are reinforced again and again by your habitual reactions and mind speak. And this is how the Spirit speaks truth to us through the events of daily life. Because in these kinds of moments of recognition, there's a choice that we can make. Do we follow the conventional habits of our minds, those well-trodden, hardened paths of our routine self? Or do we choose to let go of that conditioned prejudice, no matter how juicy it may feel at the time, and instead soften and open, to have an open heart to receive the seed planted in us through this moment? In this way, with having an expansive open heart, we start to be able to receive the love of God, which looks like nothing we ever imagined at all. It's always beyond our ability to imagine or craft. And indeed, this is exactly a seed of transformation. Every time we recognize our habitual well-trodden paths, we are receiving fresh insight into our routine self and how it processes life. And that routine self cannot receive or cultivate the seed of Christ. So we have to start recognizing and opening out of that hardness, that imprisonment of routine self. And every letting go of those routine pathways of the mind and releasing into a quiet, open stance is a softening of the seedbed, cultivating the space in us that can receive and gestate the life of Christ in us. So I want to end with a poem by my favorite poet at the moment, Rumi, who wrote, "What happens to seeds inside their prisons will happen to us in our houses. The garden will bring out gifts it has hidden for years. Presence, presence. This resurrection, this spring, is here now inside me. Language cannot say it. Silence is Lord. Birds are landing all around us like arrows, with messages from placelessness tied to their legs." So may we become soft, open, and receptive to the handcrafted gifts, the winged seeds of freedom and awakening that God scatters into our lives moment by moment. And may we tend and cultivate the seed, allowing the life of Christ to take root in us and be born in us anew. Emmanuel, God with us, God within us. Amen.